lot of clients were talking about like how to troubleshoot for Thanksgiving. And if I can just offer one piece of advice, just right off the top of my mind, this has been something I've been sharing with a lot of people, is that don't forget that you're human, please. And that's a silly thing to say, but it's like you're human. You're supposed to be celebrating with your families and loved ones. Take time and do it. Don't deny yourself these things, because there's always the possibility of developing like a negative connotation with exercise and nutrition if we start denying ourselves things that actually are in alignment with our values. It's not a fun thing. But that said, though, if you also value things like your goal, then what that means, it doesn't mean you have to give up one or the other. It means you have to allow a conversation to happen with your coach. Like, open up the dialogue so that there can be a solution. And the things that I found is, like, to be honest with you, Thanksgiving dinner is kind of like a bro meal from heaven, right? It's like awesome carbs, it's protein. Like, I love it. This is where gains go to live, right? And thrive. But it's actually usually not the meal that I find is problem. It's the habits around the meal. Because what does everybody do after eating Thanksgiving? Sit on the couch and just like melt. And you just become the couch. And then not only that, but like you have the delicious leftovers for the next day. And then you start like blending into that. And then it turns into Thanksgiving week. So it's like, we can talk about that. But it's a funny thing, because when we think that we have to uphold this crazy standard, and then you realize that people who do these things and they're able to, succeed on their goals, they're human too. And that just means that we have to understand that if they're human too, A, they make mistakes, right? Nobody's perfect. And secondly, if they wanted their goal, then it wasn't their inability to make mistakes, because guaranteed they did. But because they wanted the goal, it was the fact that they were willing to find a solution. They were willing to continue going and trying to find a solution. Whereas a lot of people who don't look for that solution, they just self-destruct. And I've heard that a lot. I'm sure there's a lot of people in this call that can raise their hands, or at least attest and think emotionally that, yeah, when things go bad, it turns into like a, well, I'm off the rails, so I might as well just go, and then turns into, again, Thanksgiving week. So if that helps anybody, I hope it does. I hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving. And yeah, just have a lot of fun with it. Take your time. I think we're probably as full as we're gonna be. It's probably gonna be a small crowd. Let me hear this from Russell. Sure. Dude, I just saw the just saw the movie Thanksgiving last night. It's a horrible horror movie, and that's actually what it's about. It's about like this guy who gets, yeah, you're smiling, this guy who gets like super he becomes the villain because of that. So I'm not going to give it away just in case you want to see it, but it's a fantastically horrible movie. It's like B movie plus, and you're gonna have a great time. Go see it. So yeah, it's probably gonna be a smaller crowd tonight, guys, because of Thanksgiving. So just what I would love, as I always try to encourage this on these kind of calls, is please unmute yourself at any time. Just talk. I don't want this to be one of those things where it's just me lecturing. I don't mind talking. It's a good field. I love talking about what I'm gonna talk about tonight. So I can probably chat your ears off forever. But please just unmute yourself, just chat. Don't worry about throwing things in the bottom, because I'm probably not gonna read them. And if I don't, and there is something, Andrew, I'm gonna count on you to interrupt me, okay? So, one of the things that I kind of was like originally thinking I was going to talk to you guys about deadlifting. Maybe we still will, but Ben was like, no, dude, talk about like growing muscle and what that means and how you can do it. Because like one of the things I did with Ben, it was a little while back now, it was about 5 months ago that we started, but we really kind of went running, I think around September. So about 3 months ago, maybe, I think it was like mid-August. Which is where I kind of surrendered the reins and I said, Ben, I just want you to program for me. I want you to do that, because I wanted to feel it. I wanted to feel what it was to like, just again, let go of my reins, because we all have these exercises or these rep ranges or these things we like to do in the gym. And being subjected to things that you're not comfortable with, there's a thing about being coached that obviously every single person on this call knows, where you have to be willing to go in and just do what somebody else says. And that's a skill unto itself. So it's like, kudos to all you guys. But I wanted to feel it, but I also wanted to know what he was going to do, as all hail Ben, kind of. We were like, hey, well, what is it that Ben does? What is it that is special? And it was really eye-opening that when I was doing it with him, one of our focuses was that, because we could kind of skip through like some foundational work, because it's something that I've been obviously doing for a while, and a lot of skill acquisition. So this is stuff I'll talk to you guys soon about. But we could kind of skip to like optimization. So you guys aren't you're not unfamiliar with these phrases, I'm hoping. If you just nod along as I'm talking, if this is something that you've heard before, like foundational optimization phases, stuff like that. So when you're able to kind of skip the optimization phase, it's basically inferring that you have the essential requisite joint range of motion, skill, stability, and so you can go to output, right? And if we can do that, then you can design and you can direct that output towards growing specific muscle groups, right? And so if you look at like time's finite, a plan is finite, not only like finite, but limited. So we only have a certain amount of hours, we only have a certain amount of reps and sets that you can get that are beneficial, and not only beneficial, but that you can recover from. So this is why we work out for 45 minutes to an hour, not 10 hours a day, right? Because 10 hours a day, there's probably like, 9.5 hours of junk volume there. So what we did was the cool thing that I first noticed when we started this was that we were like, hey, what muscle groups are lagging? What muscle groups are either not developing to the point where you'd like them, or we just want to look at the body just completely objectively and say, hey, where we want to develop. And so a lot of my time this past 2 years, because it's kind of funny, the conversation started on home gym equipment. Well, again, because of COVID, I started working out in my garage a lot and I started doing a lot of Olympic lifting. And so, as you can kind of imagine, a lot of the Olympic lifting, if you guys know what that is and stuff, it's a lot of legs and it's a lot of mid back because you're constantly in this spinal extension position. And so, and a lot of shoulders, but it's not necessarily a lot of like lats. It's not a lot of like isolated motions. So it's not going to hone in on hypertrophy because there's certain principles that surround the conversation of hypertrophy. One we talk about all the time is tension, tension being the language of muscles, and then range of motion. And that's kind of like, again, prerequisite, but exploring range of motion with time under tension for a duration that can then elicit a response, right? And Olympic lifting doesn't really do that with certain muscles, but it does with other ones. So you can look at the physique and be like, oh, this is kind of cool. This is growing really, really well. But hey, we have an opportunity here to grow like lats. Let's get like lat width. Let's get hamstrings bigger. Let's get arms bigger. And it's like, that's really cool. Because when I started the program, it was almost a little bit different than I would have done it myself in the previous times, which is first of all the first learning experience that I had with Ben, because we just looked at it like a amount of sets per week that we were able to extract upon and say, hey, we're going to devote a lot of the volume towards lats and trying to really build the foundation in that department. So we're thinking scapula, we're thinking the ability to not flex at the spine, because if we do that, then we lose the stability in the trunk that will actually lead towards like the lats being a spinal extensor. So I'm trying to think the whole time while I'm explaining to you guys what this well, that I don't want to throw this into like a theory course because it could be talked about forever. I'm trying to make this as applicational as possible. So if I ever do go off the rails, just pause and say, Steve, pause button, what does that mean? Because I will kind of talk like that sometimes, and then I'll be like, okay, I gotta dumb it down, because sometimes I'll be like, dumb word, I shouldn't say that. But when it comes down to trying to grow these muscles, it was really cool to see, hey, like in this position, this means more is more, but over here, more is not more. You need to do less is more. And so it was really cool. Helmet, beautiful mind, right? Yeah, but like if you look at certain positions that you're really good at, I'm sure you guys could all agree that there's probably a motion or like an exercise that you don't have to do much of, and then you just obliterate the muscle, right? Like so I've known some guys, they do like one set of calves and they're just broken for the next week. Yes, we got some things like that. Or you guys do like one set of abs and your abs are cramping, or you do set of biceps. Like Mattia probably goes in there and does one set of biceps and he's just blown up for years because his ability to contract his biceps is so high because he's trained them, he knows what to do. So everybody has a thing like that. And so for me, I had to go to town on I had to go to town on my lats, because it wasn't just the lats, it was the fact that there was like this in like because of a lot of Olympic lifting, which involves a lot of external rotation, spinal extension, is primarily mid back, like I was saying. So like I had to kind of get out of the thought of that's where my shoulder blades need to be. I had to get into this protracted state where we're stabilizing in like the serratus muscle. So if anybody knows the serratus muscle, you guys watch boxing at all? It's referred to as the puncher's muscle. When you punch and your shoulder blade comes forward like that, and that shoulder blade kind of comes out, right, and wraps around the front of the rib cage. Or if you see bodybuilders and they do the front lat spread and you see those wings, you guys ever seen that? That'd be the serratus, right? And it's one of the probably the most underused muscles in bodybuilding, because there's nothing that we're doing that's doing that. And a lot of the time too, a lot of the cues are what did we say? Shoulder blades back. So the second we do that, we're saying goodbye serratus. You don't need that anymore. So a lot of people will end up suffering with weak or underdeveloped lats, and then they'll say my lats are lagging, and it's actually not the truth. It's just that they can't activate them. They can't actually get into a position that allows the muscle to be lengthened. So this is hopefully where I was trying to go with this conversation is, oh, understanding that what I took from this was that I had to get this requisite ability. I had to then gain skill in this ability to actually elicit a response in the muscle so that I could then go to town on it. Okay. And what that means is like I had to really, really understand not only just like on paper, because we all can understand on paper, but what does it feel like to actually take this muscle into length and ranges and explore that on a stability front so then I could do my job. So I'm going to share my screen quickly. I'm going to kind of pop in and out of sharing my screen here just so you guys can see what I'm showing. Dum -dum, where are you? So this, you guys can see this keynote thing here. Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to read it off to you. You guys can kind of just walk it through, but this is the best way I could summarize it, right? So mobility, stability, skill, then output. So if you look at any series of muscles, this is pretty much like one of the best things I think that you can fundamentally use to guide yourself through a protocol that will forever kind of be evolving so that you can look to like what we would call as like a low hanging fruit or a lever or something that can provide extreme value going forward. And I do firmly believe that this never ends. So meaning that you can get retardedly strong at like a motion, like a squat, for example, and you may never see any stability or any form errors or any range of motion or mobility errors if you're comfortable working at X weight. But when you get beyond that weight you're comfortable with, what happens? Form breaks down. You guys are all in the program. A lot of you probably have had the assessment workout. The assessment workout we give has three different rep ranges, right? So it has like high reps, mid, and then low. And the reason why isn't because we want you to do less reps. It's because we want to see how you're handling more load for a lower duration to see if we can, if you're seeing breakdown when the load gets applied, or if we're seeing breakdown when you go into higher rep ranges, because those are different parameters in which we extract results, right? So when we're thinking about what this means, first off, you got to be thinking, hey, like if I'm trying to grow a muscle, what are we trying to do? We're trying to essentially put tension on it, right? So if you're thinking, hey, I got this bicep here, like everybody knows this, and this might sound silly, but like the metaphor, it's once you understand it, you can take this and you can just put it on every single muscle, and then this should help your training. You take this muscle, you put tension on it via, usually your hand. If you want to be a little bit trendy, you can put like a cuff or something like that, but or dumbbell, and you just, you contract it. And you ever seen those guys in the gym and they're like this in their shoulder? You ever seen that? And so what's happening is that person is losing stability in the joint of the shoulder, right? So we've heard Ben talk about this, and he was in the calls before. We have origins and insertions, right? So the bicep origin, again, I'm not going to go too crazy, it's over here. And then it's insertions down here. So if we're thinking about putting a bicep under tension, we need to keep this stable. So that might be in like a high cable curl where we require protraction, reach, and then contract that bicep 3-inch motion. Again, anybody wants to see this done to a master, just watch Matthew. The guy will contract for days and that won't move. You'll never see his shoulders slinging around, because if it was, then that means that you're not able to stabilize in this long enough to actually get the bicep to do the job. So now take that to another muscle group. If you think about like the gym, you guys all work out at corporate gyms. I'm just going to pause this for 1 second and come out of the share. You guys all work out at like some kind of big box gym? Yeah. A lot of nods. You ever seen somebody do a leg extension where they obviously don't know what they're doing, and when they come down with their hips lift up? Yeah, so Andrew's smiling. Anybody else see that? Okay. And this isn't to pick on people. This is to kind of bring, I want you guys to bring this into your mind so you can understand what I'm trying to, or like, depict. Yeah, right, Matt. Yeah. And, or like you see bench press and it comes out and the shoulders do this and they have this anterior dump, right? Or you do lat pull down and it goes like this and the same thing, the shoulders anterior dump, which is kind of funny because if the lat's up here and it comes down there, and we're doing a leg lat pull down, ideally we want to contract that down, but if we go like this and it comes back up, it's actually relengthening. So we're trying to shorten a muscle, but then it actually gets longer again. So this is why we want to make sure we're following this protocol. So I'm going to go back to that. I'm just going to be bouncing around a lot, guys. Any questions so far, by the way? Just unmute yourself and just yell at me. This all making sense so far, guys? I'm going to assume so. Okay. So if we start with the mobility thing, it's like, can you take your muscles and joints through a full range of motion? And that would mean the muscles range of motion, not emotions. And that's a very, very important thing to note. Because if you look at something like a squat's range of motion depending on the sport or depending on the practice you're trying to undergo, is a completely different thing than the range of motion of the ankle, the knee, the hip, the thoracic spine, and maybe even the shoulders. Because if you're having due to a high bar or low bar position, that's going to come into play. And those all are going to reflect in your ability to express strength in a squat. So whereas we say quads, like I would doubt anybody in this call can't take their leg and do that, right? Which means that that would be a fully stretched quad, right? Because that's how we stretch our quads. So can you take your muscles and or joints through full range of motion? Then can you get comfortable in exploring and holding those end ranges? Anybody on this call, have you ever had one of us asshole coaches make you do like a pause in the bottom of a Bulgarian split squat? Something like that. That would be an example of exploring the end range of motion or doing pauses when you're getting into like a row and your guys like get into the serratus and flex that serratus and try to externally rotate, get that, feel that. Because when you're shortening the serratus, you're lengthening the lat. So you're thinking, can you actually feel that? Can you spend time there? Can you hold it? Can you contract tense it? So that when you're going back through the shortening phase, you have some stability. Again, you're anchoring the muscle so you can put tension on it. A good analogy for that is like, this is my phone cord, but if you have a muscle and this is the origin and I pull, it should have tension. But if this moves, I pull, what happens? It just goes with it, right? So we're losing that tension. So the next thing would be like, are we programming exercises that allow constant programming advances, so progressive overload, so that you can explore this and actually make progress? This one's big because this opens a conversation of like, what do we do all the time to you guys that piss you off? Probably ask for videos. We ask for videos because when we're talking about progressive overload, or even just progression and advancement, it often has to do just simply with the fact that we are actually challenging what we think we're challenging, right? But like, I know if you've ever been to like a high school gym or seen younger people work out, God bless them, they're trying. But when they advance like a squat, usually they just stop going as low and keep on adding more weight. Like their squat starts getting worse and worse and worse. Or if you look at the guy doing a bicep curl, the shoulder starts moving more and more and more. And you start seeing breakdown. So it's progressive breakdown. It's actually not progressive overload. So we want to think, what are we trying to elicit from this position, from this exercise we're giving you, right? And we need videos for that. And then finally from there, once we have that, your job is to go to work, right? What do we mean by that? Output. We all want to get to output. Output is where we go and grow muscles. Okay. If you can do that, you're in heaven because output is going to give you the ability to actually do what we're trying to do, which is hypertrophy muscle. Okay. I'm going to pause here for 1 second, just ask if you guys have any questions and understand what I'm trying to get at so far. And I'm not gonna go back until I have somebody unmute themselves and actually open up a conversation with this. What do I mean by output? Yes. Okay. Let me see your face. Where are you? We all have faces. Let me see yours. There you are. Okay, sorry, I was flicking through. I couldn't see anybody. Okay, buddy. So first off, who's your coach, buddy?
Greg.
Greg? Okay, awesome. So output is like, if we talk about again, tension being the language of muscles, output means just the solid work that is implied by your ability to remain stable at the origin and actually just contract against that, right? So that's a cool thing because then it brings us to the conversation of like, why are you failing? If you probably heard Ben talk about that, like, why are you failing? It could be because, oh, it just burns too much and I can't get through it. Okay. Or I'm holding my breath. Like I just had a session with a client who she was doing bicep curls and then she would actually start failing because she was holding her breath. And I'm like, it's a bicep curl. I need you to relax. It's okay. Nothing's going to happen. Just breathe, right? Because people don't. They're like, oh. And they just close down. They have like they're just completely tense. You need to relax. Just smile. Just nothing's gonna happen to your arm, right? Or it could be something else. It could be like you actually do lose stability. And this was a big eye opener for me. And this is again a different conversation. But if you look at like the pecs as a big muscle, every single guy wants to wear the pecs, right? And we're trying to get into like a bench press. The stability muscles are going to be in the scapula behind you, so your ability to retract and stabilize the scapula. So a lot of people, if we look at tension would be I love that. Well, that Spencer pops up when I mention pecs. Yeah, so tension in the scapula has to be like held the whole time, right? So first off, when we say tension, we eventually do mean weight. Like that will be obviously one of the biggest things that leads towards tension, right? We shouldn't forget that because some people just think tension is like, oh, I'm flexing my pec. It's like, no, that's not tension. That's just you flexing your pec. So we're stabilizing the scapula and we're going through that range of motion. And then we think, I'm pressing, and then I go, oh, like that. Did my pec fail? Or did I lose tension in the back? Lost tension in the back, right? Does that make sense to you guys? So what's the first intervention most people do? Drop the weight. Right, but what did we just say about weight? Weight is tension, right? So if we drop weight and tension's language muscles, what did we just do? We just dropped the signal to the muscle, right? We just dropped the ability for the muscle to grow. Okay, so that's not the goal. But you also know with that weight, you can't do the exercise, right? So then what's our job? To work on the crap that's stabilizing it. See what I'm saying? So that's why a lot of people, and this is eye-opening for some people because they actually start reflecting on their own training in the past. One thing I can tell you from my past is like squats. I'd beat the crap out of my quads, beat the crap out of them. And to the point where like, there's no way I shouldn't be squatting more. Why are they not getting better? And the answer was because my quads were strong, but my core was not. I didn't know how to breathe. And it's like, okay, so my quads could go to work at all times. But the second I was in a position where they need to work, the next link up the chain, which is pelvis, right, wasn't stable enough to actually hold down the fort so my quads could push into the ground. And you can know this if you guys just reflect on your training, if you think, okay, what's an internally stabilized position that I might struggle with? And then what's one where it's externally stabilized? So if we're using the squat analogy, the squat's internally stabilized. So it's breath, pelvis stability, right? And then externally, hack squat. So if you guys can hack squat 500 pounds, but your back squat's 135, talk to your coach because that shouldn't be the way it should be. There will be a gap, 100% there will be. I've never met anybody, even like, the greats of watching somebody like Ronnie Coleman, he's still going to do more in the leg press or in the hack squat than he would in his back squat, even if he's back squatting 800. Does that make sense? So when we're talking about output, it means getting into positions that allow you to do that and contract until the muscle's like no more. Okay. That help? Any other questions, guys? Just reading through the comments here quickly. Okay, awesome. Any interjections yet from you, Andrew? Anything you want to quickly share?
You know what's funny, man? The whole time when you started talking, some of you might know this, but my first in-person meeting with Ben was maybe in 2015 or 2016, and I went down to a muscle camp in Florida, and it was a 3-day thing. We're training, we're doing everything, and then there's time where we're spending time on the whiteboard, and he brings up that conversation of stability and talking about being internally or externally stabilized. So again, oftentimes, again, we're going to work with what we have, depending on if you guys are training from home, training at a commercial gym, whatever. And the irony in the whole thing at the time was he was, I can't remember if he was like really prioritizing and talking about one style versus the other at the time. And I kind of phrased the question to him and I said, so which should be the priority? Internally stabilized or externally stabilized exercises? And the answer is it's based on your goal and it's based on your skill level, and ultimately you need to be doing both. Because if we use an example of, I like to think of, I've told this to Brian, who trains at kind of a sports-like facility where there's moments where, like, when we're thinking about all these links and possible limiting factors, again, overall skill, lack of range of motion, lack of stability, all these things, you see, for all of us at this point, it's like I kind of generalize it as like we're kind of everyday athletes. Like, we want to be capable of doing all these things, work on our physique, include longevity. But in summary, like, we want to look good, feel good, be capable of doing all these things. And if we take two exaggerated examples of, like, my background in sports when I was playing football, largely the majority of it's barbell related work. It's power and strength specific. It's low reps. It's very different. Like, my mindset was not like I'm trying to add an inch to my lats or like whatever the thing is, right? And then if we take kind of a polar opposite approach when we look at predominantly bodybuilding style training, it's a lot of machines. It's a lot of like you can safely train to failure, but we're trying to grow a muscle, like specifically prioritize that muscle, right? And I got paired up with a guy at the camp who he has his pro card. I forget the guy's name, but he was probably like 6'6", 280 pounds, jacked guy, nice guy. And all he did was train like a bodybuilder. And we got to the part where we were including dumbbell exercises and stuff that was free weight. And this guy was on paper way stronger than me, but I had the skill to be able to stabilize in space, to be able to execute some of those movements better than the guy that's way bigger than me, if that makes sense. Right. So kind of like blending all together what Steve is talking about as far as athleticism, aesthetics, and then the skill and the intention of the actual set itself, that really opened things up to me in the sense of, okay, realize where you're weak or you have a lower level of skill, whether if it's an exercise itself or a certain muscle group. My computer does this all the time now, by the way. I think when I do this, it does watch, it's gonna do it. Yeah, there we
Oh,
go. Yeah. I'm figuring it out. But where was I? What was I talking about?
go. Skill.
Yeah. Like that just really showed
Yep.
me the significance of being able to, because at the end of the day, whether if it's in person or remote, still, there's the internal feeling of you need to know that, like, okay, I know what it feels like. Again, we talk about insertion origin, but what does that feel like to like really hammer a muscle and know that without a doubt you're doing everything right? Right? Like
Yeah.
that's the other missing component as well. Like as your knowledge and skill level and everything else increases, it's like I know that I can go into the gym, be effective, target this muscle, get the most out of it, have a very high degree of what weight I'm going to use, push myself, be efficient, and move on. Like that's, if I could summarize, like on a given day, like going in and getting your shit done, like to me, that's it. So.
Yeah, man. That's a great segue too, actually, because I wanted to talk about that quickly, which is people will come across, especially compound motions, they'll come across compound motions when they start getting heavy. And some, I don't know what constitutes heavy for people, because some people it's 100 pounds, some people it's 500 pounds. For Ben, it's 700 to 800 pounds, right? And it's like, what's heavy? But then when they start defining that, then what happens is they start changing how they move. And then they don't realize it's like nothing should change, because it's no different than a hypertrophy set. Just say, if I'm gonna fail in the bicep, it's gonna be like, oh. And I'm just gonna, I can't contract it, right? I'm not gonna go ah and start pulling it, right? I'm not gonna start moving around. Like if I fail in a leg extension, I'm not just gonna start kicking the thing. Like I'm just gonna contract the muscle and it doesn't work anymore. I'm like, oh, there you go. Right? That's what it should feel like to contract a muscle to failure. It's like you're trying, it's like it doesn't work. Just stops. And a byproduct of that is it gets angry and it yells at you and it screams and it burns, right? And so, like, if we lose that form, then what happens is, you know, I guess if we were to take this metaphor here about the mobility, stability, skill output, and just reverse it, that's a recipe for injury, right? Like basically, hey, let's go through a motion. Let's add a lot of weight. Make sure you have no skill. You are not stable, and you have no ability to go through range of motion. Just go. And then what happens is you fall. And like, oh, my back. Well, yeah. What do you think is going to happen? You have no idea where tension's going, right? And that's going to result in you have a big problem. So it's a great metaphor for that, because like we understand that we're not metaphor but relation, because we understand that muscles need tension to grow. And if you're literally trying to do that, then we have to deal with the problem that might be up here that might be separating you from getting a result, because it might be, I need to finish this rep. And that's not necessarily the goal. The goal isn't to finish a rep. That's a powerlifting thing. If that's your goal, then you need to go to powerlifting. If your goal is to move A to B, right? Because some people will get their brain on even like 20. It's like, I'm coach said 20. Yeah, we did. But at the same time, if you can do 10 more, either A, up the weight or do the 10 more. Right. And so tension, again, that conversation of output, which is really the goal here to really understand and talk about. Let me share my screen again. Is
Quick
exactly
question.
that. Sorry?
Can I ask you a quick question
Yeah, please go.
about stability? What would you say is the key to, I've been working on it and I've been trying to improve stability, but there's still a few places that I could do better. What would you say is the key to improving stability overall?
Yeah, so in terms of like, I can answer this question in two different ways. First of all, I think it's probably important to answer from a coaching point of view because you're with the coach. So write down the motions that you feel that you're unstable with and make sure your coach knows. Because if he doesn't know, there could be like a lapse in terms of, I don't have videos from this. Like I literally had that conversation with the client today. I was like, oh, just let's just get videos on this, because if you're feeling unstable here, I can't help you, right? For all I know, you're actually just set up wrong and it's not your stability. See what I'm saying? Like you could just be set up wrong. Like, and a good example is like, again, the scapula, right? So if you have an inability to contract your chest, chances are you lack mobility in your thoracic spine, right? And you have an inability to move your scapula around your rib cage. And again, the two are linked because your spine controls the position of your rib cage, right? A lot of people, you tell them to pull your chest up and then they flare their ass. It's like, okay, so this person can't do that. So we need to build that skill first and unlock that mobility so that they can move the shoulder blades, right? But what would be an example of a motion that you're having a hard time with stability in?
Squats, I guess.
Squats?
No.
So like, what is a squat, right? A squat is a controlled fall. Like you're essentially just controlling your center of mass as you go down. So people of this century, man, they love to over popularize the belief of like limb length and all this kind of stuff. And it doesn't matter because what one person's dealing with is their relative. The next person's dealing with their relative. The only thing that really matters when you're dealing with something that's internally stabilized, when you're having to fight your center of mass through gravity, is can you brace and can you maintain foot pressure, right? Because if you lose one of those two things, something's going to go wrong, okay? And then if you, as you're descending, if you're holding yourself to that standard, you'll find out where you're weak, right? So let me just quickly, I'm going to find the squat. One second, guys, hang tight. Let me see if I can find a picture of a squat here. Oh, perfect. Okay, I'm going to share my screen. Okay, so let's look at this guy. He looks like a great squatter, doesn't he? He looks so good. So this is like a picture perfect squat. So we got a couple of things going on here. When you look at this guy, we got, again, ankles. And I'm purposely going from the bottom up because we're attached to the ground. We're doing this, right? We're not floating. So we got ankles. That would be called the ankle dorsiflexion. You got knees. And if you guys are still on the belief that knees can't go past the toes, then please just delete that from your brain because knees should be able to go wherever they want. And if you want proof, walk down a flight of stairs. Okay, so we got this knee and we got to get that knee to be able to actively close. And that is actually probably less on the knee than you think, but it's actually more on the ability for the ankle to move and on the hip. Okay. And then can you guys see my mouse? Yeah. So then you got this angle right here. That angle refers to hip flexion or hip extension. Okay. So meaning how much can you get into your hip? So if you're standing up and you can pull that knee up like that and close that joint really high. Some people have an ability to get really, really high. Like I can really pull my knee up really high, probably because I have a different insertion in my hip itself that actually allows me to do that. Some people might not do. And that doesn't mean that they're bad or evil or they need to be like shunned publicly. It just means like, hey, your hip is different than that person's, right? So when you know the active range of motion, like for all we know, this guy might actually only have this. But as us coaches, when you look at that ankle, look at that knee, look at that hip, you look at the ability to keep that back straight. Then we look at things like even in your neck and your eyes, then it's going to tell us as you're descending, where's the weakness, right? Because then we can take that motion apart. A good example of that would be like, okay, we got knee flexion extension, leg extension, Bulgarian split squat, right? Pretty cool. Okay, we got hip flexion extension. We got something like a glute bridge, Romanian deadlift. Sounds pretty cool, right? And you go through the list that would unlock everything that this guy is supposed to do individually, and then you progress them. And then you come back and revisit the squat, knowing that the squat is not independently the squat is a sum of its parts, right? And it will react based on the weakness. So whatever weakness you have, you're going to fail to that 100% of the time. Somebody might have an amazingly strong back, amazingly strong glutes, amazingly strong knees, crap ankles. What do you think they're going to do in the squat? They're going to bend over and it's going to be like you're at a stripper club. Okay, they're going to have that ass all twerked out, okay? Because they can't access those ankles, so those knees will not go forward, and they're just going to bend over. Okay, but then what happens? You get into a leg press, and they're like Dorian Yates. So do you see how it's more, again, you're talking about stability, but now we've changed the conversation to joint expression, muscle expression, range of motion, stability becomes a byproduct of that. Does that make sense? That help? So where's my little keynote? There it is. Okay. So the reason I said in the beginning about how this is something you can kind of use as like a 360 is that when you're looking at mobility, this will evolve and you'll be able to see what's happening as you progress with the weights. And you'll be like, hey, what's the thing that will then be the problem? Like, let's keep on going in the squat analogy. Person gets the angles fixed. Great. They can go to the squat, start adding weight, and the knees start caving. Okay. Now we got a new problem, right? Let's build those muscles up, right? Because we asked ourselves the question, is there a problem with mobility, stability, skill? Like what's skill? Skill is just time underneath the bar. People forget, like, how do you get good at squatting? maybe try practicing, right? People just want to pass that off like it's just some innate quality. It's they don't realize that, like, Lu Zhaojin, I think you guys know what that guy's name is. I know Andrew does. Like, that this guy is a Jap or a Chinese weightlifter. He was probably taken from his parents when he was in the womb, and they probably gave him a barbell and said, "Go snatch." And this guy is like, "Okay, I'm gonna snatch." And then he breaks the world weightlifting record, and he's 138 pounds and can snatch 415. It's like, all right, well, again, it's a skill he's been practicing his whole life, right? So there's that component too. And then the whole point of this is like, okay, what's the missing? Like, how do we assess it, right? So, I wanted to show you guys some videos because when it comes down to this, actually, before that, I'm going to show you this. This is what I want to show you. Okay, can you guys see this picture enough to actually see the muscle fibers? Can you see that? Yeah? Yes? No? Yeah? Do I need to zoom in? Because this is obviously just a textbook picture. I just found it and it was the best one I could find. The reason I'm
Zoom
showing
in a bit, zoom in a bit, Steve.
zoom in a bit. That better? Yeah? Yeah, okay. So, like, this is the best you're probably going to find. The reason I showed you this was actually Andrew kind of touched on this already. But the right exercise selection based on what you're trying to achieve, the physique, not only that, but also in terms of what the muscle actually does. So, like, there's a lot of complicated ways to talk about this that we can talk about strength profiles, resistance profiles. We can talk about moment arms, all this kind of stuff. But what really matters is, again, the original thing I said, which was muscular tension, right? How do we put tension through muscles? We have to align the muscle and what it does with the resistance source. It's pretty simple. Again, if you just dumb it down to the bicep, put the bicep in alignment with the resistance and contract against it. It's pretty simple. If your biceps, if I'm here and the weight's over there, I'm probably not going to have a very good time contracting my bicep. It's probably going to be my rear delt or my rotator cuff, something in there, trying to resist my arm being pulled over there. Does that make sense, guys? Sounds pretty simple, right? So if you look at every single thing you do in the gym, there's always a direct resistance source. And often what you'll actually find too is if you go around your gym and you look at the machines, and this is stuff that Ben will show you in like camps and stuff, certain machines that are really good will actually have like camshafts designed with the resistance cable to actually move through the muscle belly and how it actually works as a muscle in terms of the strength part or the strongest parts, the weakest parts, so it can actually glide through. And a bad machine will do the exact opposite. Some bad pressing machines just are horrible because you'll get in and you're like, oh my God. And the pecs get incredibly weak as you shorten them, right? But they're incredibly strong back here. So, a different conversation. But, anyways, when you're looking at this, what do you see? Muscle fibers running all different directions, right? It's a bunch of spaghetti that's been spilt on the ground looking like a human, right? So, if we look at that and we're doing, let's just imagine this guy's on a bench and he's doing a bent over row like this, right? Which muscles do you see? Can you guys read it and actually tell me which muscles would be in opposition to the dumbbell he's trying to pull if he's doing a bench row? He's
In
bent over.
opposition?
Sorry?
In opposition?
Yeah, if he's bent over a bench, imagine I'm against a bench and I'm rowing, right? Which muscles can you, by the orientation of those spaghetti strands, which muscles do you see are in opposition? You don't have to say them all, but just pick one that would be in opposition to the resistance source if he's pulling that dumbbell off the ground. Because that dumbbell
Teres
is.
minor, teres major.
Yeah, you got this one running this way. You got this one running this way again. Lat right here. You got it running this way. You got it running kind of that way, right? So when we're looking at this and how it kind of like works, right? The reason why people will have pain or they'll develop poorly, because here's a good example of that. You got like your external oblique, or you got your iliac crest right here, or you got like your thoracolumbar fascia, or you got your spine erectors, right? Spine erectors are running up the back, but I'm bent over doing a lat dumbbell row. So they're running that way. They shouldn't be involved at all, right? They shouldn't. But then people are like, oh, my back. And then you look at their form, and every single time they pull the chest up like that. And it's like, well, yeah, no wonder. You're basically aiming them at the resistance source. So when we start getting really, really in depth with this and like muscle camps, this is what we're trying to help you guys understand. Is like if you're trying to grow a muscle, this is what bodybuilding comes down to is isolation. We're trying to get one muscle, not necessarily, so it's never going to be one, but one major muscle we're focusing on is saying, hey, that lat. The muscle fibers in that lat, see how they kind of not run horizontally, but they almost run up. They kind of string up towards the armpit, right? So then what motion, what position, what exercise, what actual machine might have the best profile to match how that muscle moves? And that's why we'll pick certain exercises for you guys, right? And then again, based on the requisite knowledge that you have the ability to get your muscle through a full range of motion, you have the ability to stabilize it at both shorten and lengthen ranges, then it's just great exercise selection that lets you do that, right? And then on top of the exercise selection is once that's picked, can you actually do the exercise properly? And how will we know? Get us videos, right? Does that make sense? Does this picture help you guys understand that when you actually see this? Because another thing too is like, if you look at this delt, see how that delt's running down? But imagine his arms out like this. What would then happen? The fibers would be running with that row again. So then we'd be turning off the lat. We'd be saying, oh, hey, back of shoulder, I want you to row this dumbbell. I want to turn this dumbbell row into a rear delt row. It's like, that might work. Okay, that's an option. Where it's like, oh, hey, glute. And then you can get really dumb. And then you start basically recruiting muscles that don't make sense. So I'm going to show you some videos, guys, of some motions that don't make sense. Okay, and this is an exact option for that. Okay, so yeah, this is a bad deadlift. I hope nobody's deadlifting like that. Okay, please don't deadlift like that. That would be an example of a bad deadlift. But what do you guys see? The point is not the deadlift so much, but what do you see? Like, he basically, no muscles are engaged actively. He cannot obviously get into hip flexion. Remember how he had that picture? That angle right there, right? That's hip flexion extension. Can this guy get into it? Somebody's got to unmute and say no. Come on. Do you see that angle?
I'm dying over here.
So we got this right here. We got the femoral angle here, and then we got this, he's a camel, right? The guy's going to start spitting water soon. It's just boom, and he actually probably will puke if he keeps on doing that. So right here, and then it rounds completely, whereas we want to be able to actually have that crease. Like, look at this guy. Look at the hip flexion on this guy. This guy owns hip flexion. See what I mean? And lo and behold, it's Greg Everett. Well, of course it is. Anyways, if you know that, that's an inside joke. But anyways, so this is like a bad deadlift. And we got a good one from the man himself, which is C-Bum this year, right? You guys watch how this guy deadlifts, and you'll understand why he can contract and get the results and the muscles he wants. And why do you think his hamstrings are so big? Do you guys see a problem? I certainly do not. What do you guys notice? Come on, mics are off. Let's talk. We're a bunch of meatheads right now watching bro videos. Pretty soon, you guys will all have Ronnie Coleman screaming, ain't nothing but a peanut.
Spine and core were stable the entire time. Much less knee flexion than you see with a lot of people doing deadlifts.
Yeah, and so when you look at the knee flexion with him, like, what would be the major, maybe the reason, right? If you look at C-Bomb and his physique, he has he doesn't have a very big torso, which is why he looks so good. He has normal. It's pretty normal. His femurs aren't crazy long, but they're longer than most people. Like, if you look at Ben's femurs are not very long, but Ben has a very short femur length, right? Bigger torso. And so if you watch Ben deadlifts like a piston. It's very weird. It's very efficient, but it's like a piston where you can see he's very much in his hamstrings, right? Yeah, very much in his hamstrings. And so, like, position, this is a good example of how, like, nobody deadlifts the same. Somebody, do you guys know who Russell Orr is? Just a simple nod, yes or no. Some people probably. No, look him up. Russell Orr, he's nuts, man. Like, he's, well, claimed natural. I'm sure he is because he's been tested in federations. But I think he's from Texas. Incredibly strong guy. Has the world record for his weight category, Russell Orr. And I think he's over 900 pounds now, or 870 pounds for his deadlift. And when he does it, his chest is right up, right? He's not a horizontal back angle like Chris, but is it wrong? No, because that's his body. That's his leverages, right? So that's why I said originally, like, there's no way to say one form is right. It's about what can you do? Can you stabilize in the core? And can you maintain even foot pressure? Because those two things will inevitably solve the form you're trying to basically correct. Because I could say knees over the bar, get that back straight, get the hips over here. And then if you're like, but all I feel is my big toe and my heels lifting, then that's the incorrect form for you. Okay. And then, but vice versa, if you feel foot pressure and you're able to stabilize in the core, if you look at Eddie Cohen's one of the best powerlifters of all time. He had a bent back angle. His back was not rounded, but like locked down with his ribs down. right? And that's how, and he has a world record again. So like, how do you say he's wrong? Russell Orr, who would do RDLs for sets of like this, whatever, with the bar intentionally reached from him with like 450 pounds for like sets of 20. And so you can't say he's wrong. He's strong as anything. Like, so that, you see what I mean? So that's a deadlift. Let's look at some bad rowing form. Now, we can't really pick on him because he's demonstrating bad rowing form. But funny thing is, this isn't actually as bad as it could be. Right? But a couple of things there. Pulling anterior shoulder dump, flexing at the spine, right? Jolting motion, no contraction. So there was a mention earlier about how do you know if you're stable, right? Contracting and being able to hold it in both ranges, shortened, lengthened. So where's the shortened, lengthened, or shortened range of the lat here? And again, think resistance source, guys. Like your resistance source is in front of this dude. It's coming back, right? You see that? So if we go back to this picture here, then the muscles running in opposition to the torso this way are going to be majorly in responsibility for that load, right? Does that make sense? Anything that's resisting horizontal tension. So again, lat. You might get some traps because the traps go down, but they also go in, right? You're going to definitely have some rear delts because, again, they're going to kind of run opposition. The closer you down here, the less you're going to have them. The wider you go, the more you're going to have them. So you can start altering positions based on what you're trying to do. Does that make sense? Then we got somebody else. Oh, who's this guy? And you can almost feel his contractions. I can't not watch these videos without contracting my lats. I'm like, oh yeah. Oh, yeah, there's the rep. And that's all I'm thinking about when I'm watching these videos. I'm like, there's B-Pack in his glory days. Barking. Get a bark. What'd you guys notice?
I like how they jerry-rigged the attachment.
Beautiful stuff. Beautiful stuff. But what'd you guys notice? Again, unmute yourself. Somebody new, say something.
I can't imagine about what the load was, but I did see him. He rocks quite a bit, but yeah. He does get the finish on the contraction really hard at the finish. So you could see it.
Yeah, you can see. You can contract with. You know he's getting that contraction.
Yep, but I mean the load has got to be stupid.
Right. And so, well, it's a funny thing though, because a lot of people will think like, okay, so what does tight form mean? Right. Cause somebody, like, if you look at Arnold, when he used to do his Arnold curls, he'd be swaying everywhere. But then when you watch him do his negative, he'd be tight. You know what I mean? Then sway and then be tight. And so, and people are like, well, I can't do that. It's like, well, the goal is load on the muscle. And if you're stable in the origin joint and you can actually take that kind of tension, then do it. But I'm not saying you need to sway everywhere. It may be, I don't know. For Ben, I know you just nailed it. So he could get the contraction. That's what he was doing it for. Because he knows what it feels like to get the contraction. So he's like, I'm going to strangle that life force out of that muscle and get that contraction. So he'd sway into it. But some people are swaying so that they move cable from A to B. And if
they're using momentum. They're using momentum, not pulling. I'm training my buddy right now, and he's new in the gym, and so that's the constant thing. Don't use the momentum. Pull it. Don't swing it.
Yeah, exactly, man. So like that's what we're talking about, right? And that's why I've picked these videos and showed you that diagram as well, so you can understand the whole intention between, like, again, mobility, stability, skill, output, and understanding how it all comes together, so that you can then get into sets better and understand really where we want to go to. Again, is everybody wants to get to output. What does it mean to output? Output means, again, what Bendis did, what C-Bum did. Like when you saw C-Bum get to his last rep on his deadlift, did you see it break down? It's like, no, he held tight and he grinded up. So what, that's heavy. That was 600, I think it was 590 pounds, something that he was doing there for reps, right? And it's like, that's heavy. So anybody who says deadlift's bad for your back, it's like, no, you're wrong. 100% wrong. Being weak's bad for your back. Fix that. Because if you're not weak, then what will happen is, no matter what the heavy is, and again, heavy is relative. For somebody else, it's 600 pounds, obviously. Somebody else may be 100 pounds. That's okay. Nothing wrong with that. We can build on that. But the point is that it shouldn't change your form. And then what your job is, super simple. Soldier on, go into the workout, and work hard once you have the ability to, right? And that's why in the beginning phase of the coaching, there's a lot of things like higher reps, trying to make sure we're taxing muscular endurance so that you can make sure you're holding that form tight. So that then when it comes down to, like, you know, going into these longer or the heavier sets, you know, it's not going to break down, right? So yeah, guys, I didn't realize how it's probably been an hour. Again, like I told you, I could talk about this kind of stuff. Like I'm a meathead through and through. I could talk about this stuff for hours. So if there's any questions, I'd love to hear it. But of course, I also want to make sure that you guys are off in an hour.
Yeah, Steve, I want to jump in before you end the call. I mean, obviously, everything you're talking about, stability, mobility, these are important factors. What would you say is probably the biggest thing that people are missing just across the board if there's a generalization in their back training? I mean, I personally have the goal to look like a yield sign. So
no waist.
Tighten that waist down and expand that out. What would you say is is there one key factor or one key exercise that you think is a big difference maker?
Yeah. So when you say back, do you mean lats or do you mean thickness?
Yeah. I would say that V spread more than the thickness. Both so, are important.
Yeah. So the V spread, like, actually had a client or not client, a friend of mine. He was actually a trainer at the original gym that I first started training at a long time ago. He asked me the same question recently, and then he was like, "The lat spread. I need to get a better lat spread." I'm like, "Well, what is the lat spread? It's your ability to actually like not spread. I hate using the same word, but lengthen the lat. So how do we lengthen any muscle? We lengthen one muscle by contracting its antagonist. So again, if you lengthen your bicep, flex your tricep, right? If you lengthen your pec, flex your rhomboid and trap. That's how you're going to lengthen it, by flexing the antagonist muscle. You guys don't have to know that, but if you do, it'll really help you understand the intention behind exercise. So what's the antagonist of your lat? Serratus, right? So we need to have, yeah, exactly. We need to not only have the serratus strength, because some guys are here and they might get some serratus, but the serratus isn't just one little muscle. If you look at like the, we'll type it in quickly. If you guys have some time, if you guys need to jet, by all means. I'm going to share my screen quickly just so I can answer your question with a picture. So, see that, guys? Okay, it's not just one muscle, right? It is one muscle, but it's not just one line that's attaching, oh, this one thing. So you go right here and suddenly contract it. It's like, no, it has this bunch of muscle, you know, lines and orientations. Like, look at this dude, right? See those little wings there, right? But that's the whole point, is when you're firing your serratus anterior, its ability to wrap the scapula on the front of the rib cage is important. So rib cage, think spine. Do you have mobility in the vertebrae that can actually contract and flex and move and rotate to help you get in position so that your scapula can actually do that too? Because if you're like, you guys ever seen like a really old person that has not been in shape and they get out of a car and they can't even get their back up and they can't even move the neck? Like, so that would be an example of the epitome of bad thoracic extension, right? They're just stuck in this flex position. So they're not going to get any movement in the shoulder. And so they'll be like, I can't raise my arm up. It's like, no, it's not your arm. Your arm is probably actually, you know, normal to fine. It's your back. So we need to fix that first. So to answer your question, it's like, that's the first thing, spine. Second thing is you need to get that serratus strong. So you need to pick exercises that allow you to functionally express strength in length and ranges of the lat, right? Because if we lack ability to get into the spinal position necessary, then we'll lack the ability to get into that protracted position, right? And then from there, pick the right exercises that allow you to demonstrate it. Straight arm pull downs, it's a great one. The problem with straight arm pull downs, if you don't have the serratus, then what will happen is it'll turn into a mid-back pull down. You ever seen like a lot of gym girls like this, and they pull the, you've seen that? Chest comes up, shoulder blades come back, and it turns into this whole like mid-back lower trap pull down. Right. If you have the ability to actually use your serratus, fantastic actions. Awesome. You'll love it by pushing its shoulder blades forward. Can you guys do that? Can you actually just shove your shoulder blades forward? Like, yeah. So just think like that the whole time. Yeah, exactly. Literally do a lat spread and try to do that. Now, if I was to answer you in my bro ways, one that's been really good for me is just V-bar pull downs. Sounds silly, but V-bar pull downs have been a really, really good fixture for me because it puts you here. Right? By association, if I'm in a straight bar, what happens to my shoulder blades? You saw it, right? They literally went back because I had to grab onto this bar. When I'm here, I'm like, oh, shoulder blades are here. So it actually helped me stay in this protracted position. When I'm pulling and I'm driving down, it actually would help build that immediately. So sometimes it can be the fix. But the problem is that, again, if you have a dominancy, like, you know, Mark Bell, strength is never weakness, weakness is never strength. Same kind of thing. Like if you have that strength, it's not a problem. The only issue is that you probably have learned the muscle contraction And so you probably are going to rely on it. So if you're using implementations or handles or these different exercises that lend towards muscles, kind of think back to that chart where you saw the fibers and the orientation, you're probably going to leverage them. You're probably going to lean into those ones. So you try to advantage the exercise as much as possible so that you lean away from anything else doing the job. Does that make sense? But running in, it would be spinal extension, flexion, serratus strength, right? And then, yeah, I would suggest things that cue external rotation. Cool.
One more quick question, Steve. I know we are out of time.
No, go for it. I'm here.
My wife is very, you know, her natural, the way when she walks, she's very just like this, right? And to try to help her combat that, is it just building up those, I don't know if it's lats or shoulder blades, I guess would be kind of to try to help her natural inclination fight against, because when she just walks regularly, it's just like this, you know?
Yeah. When you're thinking about that kind of stuff, in my experience, it's habits and postures and that we assume based on things, right? So like women are bad because purses. Sounds silly, but like seriously, women are bad at purses. My wife started getting this posture when she had a baby, right? She started like developing this whole kyphotic, and then she'll fix it. And then when she gets like that, she'll get migraines because again, impingement on the vagus nerve and stuff. So like, yes, muscles, trap three, rhomboids, that kind of stuff, spinal extensors, yes, it'll all help 100%. But the problem is if you give people exercises like that, they're probably going to still stay here. You know what I mean? And then they'll be like, I can't do it. It's like, yeah, because you're weak there. So other muscles, that's why I just said 2 seconds ago, other compensatory muscles that kind of are almost in the same alignment will kick in. So in my experience with that kind of thing is you have to, Ben will hate me saying this, and I hope he doesn't fire me, but you have to kind of rely on stretching, foam rolling as an intervention to give a person proprioception. Yeah, exactly, man. Because it lets them feel emotion. It lets them spend time there and be like, let's just feel it, right? What does it feel like to be there in this position? And like get them on a foam roller and then like watch how they move, because like Anissa, right? Like if she's in that extended position and then like you get her to reach on a foam roller, she's probably going to lift her ribs. She's probably going to crack at the lower back because it's really hard for her to be mobile here. So then what you do is just focus on breath work, right? Because you look at what the diaphragm is supposed to do. It's not just supposed to pump here. Like us bros, we get so obsessed with like diaphragmatic expansion coming from the actual like the lower external oblique area with bracing, right? And that's why you see a lot of powerlifters walk around like this, because they all they do is breathe here. They don't breathe into the diaphragm. But you look at somebody else like a football player, and they'd have to breathe into the upper back because they need to throw a ball. If they didn't, they're like, oh, right? They need to be able to have the mobility here. So for her, get her on a foam roller, move around. Get her into some L-DOAs might be nice as well if you can find some that are doable, because a lot of them are just like, and you can't get into them, right? But then combine it with the breath, because the breath will be the signal where she can kind of calm down that sympathetic nervous system. Yeah, exactly. Trigger the parasympathetic where her body can actually say like, oh, I'm okay here. I'm safe. You know what's a good analogy? Weightlifting, like, snatches and stuff. One of the best warm-ups for snatch is SOTS press, right? Like an actual SOTS press in snatch. So you're sitting down in a squat near the bar on your back and you just press it up, right? Because it teaches you how to move through that full range of motion. And you're in a squat. You're in the bottom of a squat having to do that. So it's like, do that any weight. And it's like the hardest thing in the world, right? And if you can express function there, it's going to help you with your receiving position when you catch the weight you're doing. And so when you're warming up, you'd be like, and it feels like, oh God, everything's like cracking. The rust is like falling off as you're doing it, right? And then you have this like moment where like you just take a deep breath and your system relaxes. And then you're like, oh, there it is. Because your nervous system really does actually acclimate and say, oh, I'm fine. Right? Make sense? If that doesn't work, just hit it with a bat. Okay, guys. If there's anything else you guys wanted to chat about, we're in the Telegram group. So just drop it in there. Thanks for letting me chat yours off, gents. Hope it was of some value.
Thanks, Steve. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving, buddy. We will talk soon, okay? Good night, guys.